Hello everyone, it's Chris Hall here from Charity Digital, the organisation that helps other charities be more digital. Today, we have a special podcast for you. In March, we had over 400 charity professionals join us at Olympia London for a day of learning, knowledge sharing and connecting. We managed to record all of the 22 sessions from the day, and we'll be releasing them as bonus podcasts throughout the series to help share some of the amazing conversations we were having on the day. If you want to keep up to date with all our upcoming podcasts and events, like and subscribe the podcast through your usual podcast provider and sign up for Charity Digital updates at charitydigital.org.uk. Enjoy the pod.
5 Steps to Better Impact Reporting by Kate Rees from NSPCC. We're going to have about half an hour presentation from Kate. Then we'll have Q&A after. The Q&A, if you can and feel comfortable, then please use the microphones because that feeds into the auto captioning at the top. Or if you don't, if you create an account on the app, then you can add a comment. So post about this session at the bottom of the agenda item. If you do that, then I'll pick them up at the end and I'll read them out and we'll cover them that way. But over to Kate.
Hello, thank you for coming to the session. I'm going to start by asking you what you think impact reporting is. Hands up, just call it out.
Yeah.
And the lady at the front.
Yeah.
This slide shows what an organisation called Inspiring Impact. Yeah, just check I had that name right. Inspiring Impact is a coalition of 6 different organisations. They are measurement and evaluation organisations who come together and help us all with free resources and tools. They situate impact reporting within a wider impact practice, and that's what that picture shows. And if you wanted to learn more about how they talk about impact practice, I've just put the URL at the bottom there. The main thing I'm going to be talking about today is what would be sort of the 9 o'clock to midnight section of that. So mostly around the review and sort of understanding the difference you've made. But I think it does actually fit within the whole, which is why I wanted to show that slide. So actually, of the things that you said, so things like understanding the outcomes of your intervention, that would be in that review area. Things like the difference you've made, again, I'd see in that section. So why am I here? Why listen to me? So at the NSPC, we report our impact, or we try to. We've been measuring our impact for our current organisational strategy over the last 4 years. We developed a bespoke measurement framework to do that. There's some of what we've done that's worked really, really well. There's some stuff we've done that we can build on and make better. And we're coming up towards developing our next organisational strategy. So it's been a really good time to stop and think about what's worked, to learn from our peers. We've been, you know, meeting with others to learn and share with them. And to look at, you know, good practice around the sector and see where we can build on the good and where we can make the not so good better. So it's been a time for us, a point of reflection, and I think that's why I've been invited today to share some of the things that I've been thinking about. Some of the ways we've done that, so I mentioned we've been meeting with peers and we've been having events to talk about impact and impact reporting and understanding the difference that we're making and our progress towards our strategy. We've been gathering feedback within our organisation, so asking our leadership team, having interviews with them to ask them how they've been using the information we've been giving them and what's worked for them. And also the people who provide the data, who also have very good viewpoints, and also just wider surveys with staff. So from all of that thinking and reflection, I've tried to sort of filter it all into 5 tips, because that was the title of this presentation. So my first tip is really cheesy, but it's also true. At least for impact reporting. I'm not the only one who thinks that. For example, Innocent Drinks, the smoothie company, they have this as one of in their company values. The main thing is keep the main thing, the main thing. By that, I interpret that to mean measure your strategy. So work out what's the thing, the most important thing you're trying to understand, and that's what your impact reporting should focus on. So there's all sorts of, you know, you could get overwhelmed with the possibilities of the various different things that you could measure and report on. So to try and understand what's the most important thing to be telling people, we started with doing a theory of change. Who knows what theories of change are? Just stick your hand up. So most people. So it's basically a tool that takes you from understanding the problem you're trying to address through the drivers of that problem and the activities that can be done or actions to address those drivers. And then what your own organisation or team or service, depending what level you're doing it at, will do to try to address those. And then from that you can move through more of a like logic model, thinking more sort of logically, well, how will we understand that change? We found theories of change invaluable, and we use them at the NSPC to understand at an organisational level, but also for a lot of our services or interventions, because they do help us understand what are those critical things that we're trying to change, therefore what are the things we should be measuring. If you are new to theories of change, I found the NPC, New Philanthropy Capital, guides really, really helpful. They're on their website. They did one a few years ago, which is quite a practical guide to how to do a theory of change. And they've recently, in the last few months, done a sort of top 10 tips of how it's worked, because they've been working in lots of different organisations. So if you're interested in theories of change, Google that and get hold of it. That can take you into a lot of detail of thinking about what are those changes you're trying to achieve and how you understand if you're achieving them. How might you track and monitor, measure your progress on them? So my second tip is almost lifting you back out from that detail that you could find yourself in and think, what are the most important things that we need to tell people about? So it's almost like, what are those stock statements we know we want to be able to tell people in a year or 3 years or 10 years? And then you can build, when you're thinking about what your measurement framework or your impact reporting is going to focus on, you can build that in from the start so that you avoid that scramble that happens once a year at annual reporting time and you want to suddenly say, what have we done in terms of? So it's almost the counterpoint, I guess, of thinking your theory of change would help you identify those most critical things you might want to measure. This might help you think about, and how might we want to lead with them or talk about them. The triangle, a lady called Kate Lee, who is the CEO of Click Sergeant, has just moved to Alzheimer's Society, blogged about this about a year ago, and it gained a lot of traction in our sector of people thinking, yeah, this is a sensible way to talk about our impact. It's certainly we've been thinking about it, and it, again, it gives you that counterpoint of, are we talking about the most important thing? So I've included it here because I find it useful. So my next tip is to think about, once you've decided what that data is that you want to measure and you've decided what you want to say, that what those key things are, how are you going to use it? So, for example, is it going to inform decision making? Or is it going to inform, is it going to drive improvement? It's probably going to do perhaps all of these or a few of these things, but there's probably going to be one or possibly two that are the primary thing that you want to your measurement framework or your impact reporting to do. So, for example, if that primary purpose is to motivate staff in your organisation, it'll need to be really easy to access and understand. It'll need to highlight success. They'll need to see themselves in it somehow. And you might need to show what it took to achieve that success. Case studies and stories are likely to be really important if motivating staff is one of your primary purposes. If you want your data to inform decision making, it might be a bit different. So that was one of our primary purposes of why we were having a measurement framework and reporting our impact. And one of the things that was absolutely invaluable was having a champion in the top team. So someone who was already in that, we call them the executive board, the leadership team. So they didn't have to be invited in. They were already in the conversations and already knew what were their priorities. And they made sure that our talking about what our data was telling us was on their agenda. It made them have those conversations. And because they were a champion, they weren't questioning, is the data right? They're saying, what should we do with what the data's telling us? So they didn't sort of quibble about, it should be a few higher, a few lower. They used it to have a productive conversation. So if you can have that champion in your top team, for us, that's been really, really, really useful. And it's meant that our impact reporting is now part of how we do things around here, rather than an add-on or a thing we have to struggle to get on the agenda. When you are thinking about how to present your data, regardless of your purpose, primary purpose, make sure you're proportionate to how it's going to be used. So you might not want to include absolutely everything if it's meant to be a high-level overview, for example. So think about how that data is going to be used. So, another little task. Think about how your impact information is going to be used. So what you yourself working on, your team, your service, your intervention, your organisation. Think about how you want that information that you would be gathering and reporting on, how you want that to be used. Think about who your key stakeholders are. Will probably help you if it's not really easy to identify. And then think about what might need to be put in place for those key stakeholders. So how much, what level of detail might they need? How easy to use? How easy to access? How comprehensive? How much narrative might they need to set things in context so that they can get that information that you're giving them and actually act on it? Because that's the point, really, is getting people to take action. So it could be thinking about format, for example, a live dashboard that people access themselves versus a static report that's given to them once a quarter. Both are valuable in different ways for different purposes. Or it could be thinking about how the information's accessed and how they use it. So again, turn to your neighbour, have a think, turn to your neighbour and tell them how your impact information is going to be used. If you don't know, tell them how you're going to work it out. So this tip is really about building ownership for your impact reporting. It's really about the culture that you have. How do you and your organisation, how do you act on that data, what the data is telling you? So you could have a culture where if you read ambergreen things, red is bad, but there's not really any real robustness to the data. So, or the tolerances of what makes something red is not clear or not agreed. What that means is that you can have watermelon measures, hence the picture, where they're green on the outside and red on the inside. So they're really red, but you sort of get cajoled into reporting it as green. That means your impact reporting is going to have limited value because people, it won't have credibility. You could have a culture where red is seen as bad, but there's really strong accountability for results. You said you would achieve X, but you haven't. You've set that target and you haven't achieved it. Well, that could result in a P45, so that's not a very productive place to work. One of the things that we did at the NSPC was agree the tolerances for our measures up front, so at the start when we were setting our measurement framework, and what made something red, amber or green, we actually had them, the tolerances were dependent on the size of the target. So, for example, if the target was between 50,000 and 100,000 of something, then it would have a 5% tolerance range to make it go from red to amber and amber to green. Because it was pre-agreed, that took out that possible negotiation down the line and it made it less emotional. So if something was amber or red, it didn't mean that you were sort of judging them personally, but you'd already agreed before that if it was this, we said it would show us that. And that helped prevent the watermelon measures. You could also have a culture where red means that's not really where we wanted to be. And a more productive way of seeing that would be, so what do we need to do to get that performance to the level where we wanted it to be? I've mentioned MPC earlier, and they have a report called What Makes a Good Charity Report. And that says, I'm just going to read this out because I can't remember the quote. The best organisations use data to inform decision making at every level and are prepared to change in response to what the evidence tells them. A record of using experience to hone activities and being unafraid to try new techniques are hallmarks of an organisation that's ambitious to become better. So if that is the culture that you can help establish and build, that's going to be a more productive culture around using your impact reporting. So I'll give you an example from the NSPC. So we run therapeutic services where we work with children and families to prevent abuse and neglect and to help them recover after abuse. And when we're running those activities, we test and evaluate them to find out if they're successful. If they're found successful and there's a market, by market I mean other organisations could run these services that we've found effective, then we basically license and train other organisations to use them. We call that scale up. So that means that the effective service can reach a lot more children than the NSPC could alone, because if other organisations are running these effective services as well. A few years ago, our scale-up measures were all being reported as red. We weren't achieving what we wanted to achieve. The leadership team discussed this, and on the basis of those red measures, they commissioned a review of what it would take to get scale-up to be green, as it were. How would we get to where we wanted to be? The review, in short, recommended that a team be set up that was dedicated to scale-up, resourced with people with the right skills, and that means skilled with working with local authorities and those other organisations that might run the services, skilled with supporting doing their training, but more crucially, supporting them afterwards. So that post-implementation support was really critical. That was a few years ago, and a couple of years on, now our scale-up is one of our sort of most effective areas of work. We're pretty often green where we want to be, and it's seen as a big success. So that was an effective way to use the reds and to have the right conversation. And my fifth and final tip, tell compelling stories. I know that in the conference today you've got other sessions that are about how to tell the stories, so maybe software or things that you can use to tell stories well. What I mean by this is think about how you can really bring people with you, or the phrase I liked, how you can make hearts sing. We have a service called Speak Out, Stay Safe, where we visit primary schools across the UK to talk to children about what abuse is, so they understand it, and knowing who their trusted adults are, so that they can speak to them if they have a worry, or that they could ring Childline. We've run Speak Out, Stay Safe now in 90% of all UK primary schools since 2016, and to deliver those assemblies to around 1.5 million children every year. So the reach, that's interesting and very successful. We're really proud of it. But we did learn that targeting high reach isn't an end in itself, and can sometimes give a perverse incentive to reach those that are easiest to reach. So the next point's important about reaching the right people. So, for example, we've been really trying to build relationships and work with schools for children with special educational needs and disabilities. We've now reached 35% of those schools, so that feels important. Making a difference, that was mentioned right at the start. Children told us, we're doing an evaluation, but the first stage of that evaluation, children told us that they do know more about bullying, abuse and neglect following Speak Out, Stay Safe. They have learned more about who their trusted adults are and what Childline is and the importance of speaking out if something's wrong or worrying them. When I mentioned earlier we're developing our next organisational strategy, so as part of that we were asking our staff and our sort of movement of supporters and volunteers what they think that our strengths are, and Speak Out, Stay Safe came out strongly as one of our key organisational strengths because of the reach and the difference it makes for children. But obviously we want to do more. We want to be able to, for example, we try to visit schools once every 3 years, so each primary school child hears that assembly twice during their time in primary school. Well, we could go more frequently, for example, or we could do more to target those children who might benefit more from the messages in the assemblies and workshops. For example, we could try to work more with pupil referral units. This is just me telling you that there's, you will have compelling stories in your organisation, in your team, and this point is really just think about what they are so that you can bring people with you and make and help people's hearts sing. So, questions? Yeah. Did everyone hear the question was how do you share the data? Because so many teams have it, but we don't always share across. We share, actually have the same difficulties as well. I can't say we've totally cracked that. I think part of it is about building the ownership of, so you, the teams would have their own data because it's appropriate for them to also keep track of how things are going with their own performance, and that's right and fine. But when there's things that are important across a wider group, so perhaps at an organisational strategy level, I think it comes back to that first point about make it the right thing, make the, keep the main thing the main thing. So if people believe that you're tracking the things that are the most important, then they'll be more likely to want to see it. So part of it is about making sure you have got the right information in that at that sort of, I guess, corporate level, and making it accessible. So they don't have to ask someone to see it because that's a barrier. Can they get it themselves or can it be put on an intranet or something? People having to access it, that's another barrier. So could you do, say, once a year, we have these things called espresso sessions. It's like a time for all staff to come to a presentation about an interesting topic, and you can be there in person or on the phone. Do you have something like that where once a year you could talk about the key findings from that? So just something to break down those barriers of what that information is telling them to get them interested, and then people might want to share. Does that help? Yep. I've noticed that quite a lot. Sorry, did everyone hear the question? So sometimes the, how do I paraphrase? it's hard to, you can't always tell about the positives, but there'll be dips and lows as well. Is that a, yeah? I have noticed actually in the sector that we are talking, I would say a bit more honestly about it's not all good. You can't, for example, if you have a measure of confidence of people that you're working with in doing something, it can't just go up exponentially. Like, you can't just keep increasing your confidence always. I think we're getting better at acknowledging that there are challenges or things we haven't achieved. I don't think we do it all the time. I know, for example, sometimes we have research that doesn't have come up with the finding we wanted, and it's not always publicised, but I think we're getting better, and that's for more of that shared learning. So I think there's something about the transparency and the honesty, and you can always position something that hasn't worked the way that you thought it might as the learnings from it and what you would do differently next time. And for others to learn from. So, you know, we've invested in this, we tried this and it didn't work. So you don't have to make the same mistake. So there is that. And I think also you don't have to, so you mentioned like people don't start and stop going to programs or interventions. So that wouldn't be a relevant measure of the number of people being referred, for example. So it might be that you do use things more like case studies or impact stories. It might be that you perhaps want to understand the impact more through focus groups than, say, numbers of people doing something or a more in-depth evaluation. I think it would need to be appropriate for the service and for what you're trying to learn from it. So what you're trying, again, coming back to that, you know, what are the stories you're trying to tell? That second point. Does that help? A couple more? Okay. You just put your hand up, I think. Yeah.
I struggle with the relationship between the impact of the evidence through data and the outputs from the marketing. If I have scenarios whereby sometimes the most impactful data we've got is actually maybe not the marketing degree in terms of the content and the sexiness of the message of it.
Yes.
How do you work around that?
With difficulty. I think One of the things that we've done that has been really valuable, actually, we did some research with a company called the Frameworks Institute, which was about understanding how people in the UK hear, in inverted commas, abuse and neglect. It's not a very easy topic to talk about. And what we wanted to do is understand what were the productive frames, so things that would help people understand abuse, neglect, and the drivers of it, and what they could do, and the unproductive frames, so things that when people heard it, were it was closed them down. They thought, oh, it's such a big problem, it's all being fatalistic, it's always going to happen, that sort of thing. There's nothing I can do, and walk away. That was valuable for us because it's helped us with the wider telling our story across our fundraising and our marketing and our communications of thinking. So for us, talking about the role that we all have in society to keep children safe is a productive frame. So that's something we try to use in more of our marketing materials and also in our impact reporting. So what's the so going back to that, when, why you would pick those key measures that you want to be tracking and reporting, and the, what are the most those stock statements you want to say, we'll make sure that they're the productive ones, because that's what your research would tell you. I think that would probably be my advice, then. Yep.
Hi, I work for an organisation called Rest of Development. We support young people to achieve the change they want to see. The issue we're kind of having at the moment is we work across 10 countries, we have about 50 programmes running at a time. And each quarter we want to kind of report to our trustees, to our senior leadership. What's our kind of footprint across those programmes? What's our impact? We've got a fairly good understanding that our reach, the number of people we've reached in that quarter, doesn't answer that question. It's not good enough on reach. But, you know, all of those kind of 50 programmes I'm talking about, they might be in slightly different sectors. Some of them might be supporting young people to living, some of them might be supporting them to pursue their sexual rights, that kind of thing. But how do we kind of summarise that work and that impact in something that we can communicate to our stakeholders?
Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts on that because we've been trying to do something similar. So as we're working towards our new strategy, in our current measurement framework, which said there's lots of good about it and there's some things not so good, currently has 45 measures that we report every quarter, and that's too much, we've found. No one can get their arms around it. It's really hard to get an overview of it. So with our new impact framework, which we are still designing, and I can't say we've cracked it yet because we're still working on it, but we've been challenged to make it 15 measures or fewer that we'd report every quarter. Part of that would just be through grouping things, but a lot of that would be through focusing a lot more on what are those the most important things that are going to help us have the right conversations to respond to what the data is telling us. So that's one part of it, is identifying those most important things. The other part is, I would say, different tiers of reporting or different types of reports for different audiences. So that could be within, so at a corporate level versus at a, say, directorate or department level versus at a team level. Could be regional, could be country specific. Those different audiences will probably have different needs and they'll probably use that data in different ways. So you might have at the corporate level the overview and the summary, but then in the more detailed ones you can go into a lot more of the performance maybe rather than the outcome type data. So I'd say those two things probably. But yeah, I'm also grappling with the similar thing. Any others? Oh, one more, yeah.
Just thinking about that question we were saying earlier about what the kind of complement to the figures are actually replacing in some cases is this rich qualitative. Case studies, and that's all quite, you know, that's a big project in itself. So I guess just in your experience that you require to have a lot of investment in conducting focus groups, but you know, stakeholder policy interviews. What's your kind of recommendation to maybe you do that? That's where it should go, but maybe
So before you start investing in it, work out if you really need it. If you decide that it really would strengthen your practice, I would say the next step would be think about what you're already actually doing in gathering. So if you're, for example, evaluating one of your activities or services anyway, well, then you're probably working with service users. So you could probably conduct interviews, as it were, at the same time and ask them if you can use their story as an impact story, rather than having to set up a separate whole gathering exercise. So I'd say, very, you know, think about where you've already got conversations happening, and you could ask and introduce that as part of that conversation already. I think that's probably the easiest way. Yeah. If I have another bright idea, I'll tell you over lunch. Cool. Well, thank you all so much. I hope you've all found something in this that's resonated with you. Something you thought, oh, I might go and think about that more afterwards or tomorrow when I go back. So thank you very much.